You're listening to The Taste Masters with your hosts, David and Wyatt.
Hey guys, got a special guest with us in this episode. It's really cool. We're going to learn about malts. I got my dear friend James Weed. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. So you have the Solstice Malt, local company here in Utah. Are you the only malting company in Utah?
I'm the only malting company in Utah.
So it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you the question, what the hell is malt?
Malt is a magical process that turns regular grain into an ingredient for brewers.
That I use to make beer.
Exactly.
So I was trying to explain this to someone the other day, where without malts, how the hell am I going to make my sugar water to ferment?
You wouldn't without the malting process.
So it's kind of a big deal. You're kind of a big deal, James. And so a lot of my friends, a lot of brewers have been using you. We've used you once, I believe. I personally haven't yet, but you're coming out with some good shit, my man.
Thank you.
Good shit. So, James, tell me about yourself. Who's James? Who the hell's James Weed?
I'm just a weird guy that's watched too many food documentaries and decided to open up a malt house.
That's beautiful. And have you always been in Utah?
I have.
And so you're from Utah. And yeah. What got you into why malt?
It was a day where my wife said, "You need a hobby," and I got me into homebrewing. And I'm the kind of guy that likes to do things himself. So I started growing my own hops and I started malting my own barley. And it's not easy in a 20-50 pound batch.
Interesting.
So I went online to find some tips and tricks, and there wasn't a lot of information out there. It's kind of a lost art. And a lot of big malt houses have kept everything proprietary since the 70s. But I did find the Craft Maltsters Guild.
Okay.
Where a bunch of smaller companies were opening up on a smaller basis and providing local ingredients for local beer.
Interesting. And so you didn't grow up with the fact, hey, I'm going to grow barley and malt it?
No, my background was in finance. I was a stockbroker, an investment advisor.
So
very different
Wolf
world.
Wolf on Wall Street minus the drugs, I'm assuming?
Just barley.
Just barley.
Barley dust.
That's so fascinating to me. So you started your company in 2018. It's located in Salt Lake, I believe, correct?
Correct, by the airport.
By the airport. And how big is that facility?
About 6,000 square feet.
And then you just happened to come across that?
It took a long time to find a spot that would work for me. I had certain requirements for the malting process. Refrigeration was one of them.
Interesting.
So
And I did fail to mention, I'm so sorry. Cody, you're here.
I'm here. Oh, yeah, by the way.
For some reason, Wyatt wasn't able to join us in this episode, so he's got some duties he's taking care of. We have honorary taste master Cody. Cody, welcome to the show as well.
James, thank you, David.
I'm sorry, yeah. You can get teach Cody about malting as well. But in your facility, take me through the malting process. Where does it start?
It starts at the farm. Well, really before then, there's geneticists and universities working on grain to make it yield better in different farm locations.
Okay.
And so, but all starts, what I deal with is it comes off the combine in a farm.
And then use your farms just in Utah, or do you use farms...
I've been really good at just using Utah, except for a few times I've had to source from Southern Idaho.
Okay.
But almost all Utah.
I think Southern Idaho is Utah.
In a way, it's the same culture.
I feel like it is.
Same climate.
Yeah. Right. It's the same.
But it's big business there. They have three large malt houses. It's like $680 million in barley sales last year. It's
huge. Oh my
gosh.
Wow.
They do a lot of malting up there.
That's fascinating. So then let's go through the malt. So you got the farm. Then once you get all this, what happens? What take me, like, I've never known. I have no idea. Go ahead.
So it usually arrives either in super sacks, which can hold 2,000 pounds, or bulk trailers, which can hold about 40,000 pounds. And I have a big auger, and I load them into those super sacks for storage. But I'm about to get a grain bin, so that'll help out quite a bit
for
storage. But I have to clean it. There's some chaff in there. There's some thin kernels in there. And you don't want thins. There's not enough yield for the
So
brewing.
How do you clean that without getting any grain wet?
I run it through a grain cleaner. And it's a machine that shakes. And there's on those, there's plates with different sized holes. So things that are too big will fall on a certain section. Stuff that's too small will fall through. Anything less than 6/64ths of an inch is considered a thin or a fine.
Okay.
So I separate those. Sometimes they're grasshoppers. You know, there's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah.
But once it's clean, it goes back into a super sack for ready the germination process.
So germination, what's germination?
So that's what activates the seed to create a plant. And it's first done by soaking the grain.
Okay.
So I have these big conical tanks that I soak them on and off in water to get it to about 42, 45% moisture. This tricks the grain into thinking it's springtime and it needs to grow. But it's also important while it's soaking, I pump air through it to reoxygenate the water. It can drown the grain if you do it too much.
Okay. So do you pump straight oxygen or CO2?
Just ambient air.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Just enough to get some oxygen in there and keep things loose and free.
Interesting. So that, how big is that setup then?
There are 65-barrel tanks. They're quarter-inch 316L stainless. They're going to be ready for my great-grandchildren. They're intense.
Those are massive, my man.
They are.
Wow.
And I load them halfway. I do 8,000-pound batches.
Holy shit. Are you doing this? You do this by hand, correct?
Yep.
And then are you the sole maltster? Maltster. What's the correct
term? It is maltster.
Maltster. Yep. Are you the sole maltster?
It's basically just me. Right. I have family that helps. I have friends that help.
Do you coerce the wife to come help sometimes?
Oh, yeah. She's really good at spreading malt in the kiln.
Interesting. So this seems like a day-long process. Because I'm going to brewing beer, it takes me probably to brew a batch. I mean, the whole process, anywhere from 4 to 6, maybe 8 hours if I'm shitty, you know? So how long would a full day, how long does that take? How long is germination, setting it all up, getting it ready?
The whole process takes about a week.
Damn.
Yep.
And then after you germinate, you're going to have to kiln it, right?
Yep.
So then take me through the kilning process.
So before that, it goes into, I floor malt all of my grains.
So what is floor malting though?
So that is the old way of malting. It's pretty labor intensive, but I throw the grain once it gets up to the right moisture on a refrigerated floor. And there it allows it to start the growing.
Okay.
I have to rake it every 8 to 10 hours.
Damn.
And they still do it in some Scottish distilleries.
This is really an old, an art, you're saying.
It is. I mean, we've been malting for thousands of years.
Because if I could choose it, and it's pricier getting floor malted malt. And there's a reason for it. It's labor intensive, like you're saying.
It's true.
Wow. And so do you use big ass rakes? What are you using to spread it out?
I have a malt barrow. It's something that I had to design and fabricate myself.
Oh my God.
And I got some design. Well, I got the ideas from the Scottish distilleries that still use them.
Did you travel out there and see that, or did
I haven't.
You have to?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I was planning on doing it this fall,
but of course, 2020. Cheers. Right. I mean,
yeah.
Cody, you were gone this spring, spring. You were there in Europe right before it shut down.
Right before.
Yeah, but traveling's been a miss because of that. So I'm feeling like. I mean, have you traveled to other places to see their technique? And then what's the closest malting place from here?
The closest one is in Pocatello. It's Great Western.
Okay.
And they do more in one batch than I do all year.
Jesus
Christ.
They
do I think it's 300-ton batches.
Well, if you're looking at it, you're a one-man show in
it's
a
true.
Way. And so they're a company.
They're
a gigantic company, sounds
they're
like.
They're a big company.
Wow.
And that's where a lot of big brewers get their malt from is through them.
And so, you're a one-man show, and then after you do the germination and your floor malting, is that when you take it to the kiln?
You do.
And so, what happens in the kiln?
So, I shovel each grain onto a conveyor.
Oh, God, dude.
And,
do you have back problems? Do you have knee problems?
I actually got a hip problem from sitting too much this summer.
I think we all have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is weird. I'm usually really active, and I chose that profession to stay active. It makes me
It sounds like
and I've
it.
Had friends come over just a good workout.
Yeah.
And so, after shoveling it gets into the kiln. It has a perforated stainless on the bottom.
Okay.
It's all lined with, but it used to be the Lehigh High School walk-in freezer.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. How did you come across that?
It took me years and years to either build or retrofit equipment because they don't make equipment my size.
No, they don't.
So I've had to do a lot of research and building myself.
Wow. You've literally done all the legwork for this, James.
I did a lot.
To me, it's because I'm going to fast forward a little bit, tasting your malt and some of the beers that some of my friends have brewed. You taste that, it's like a, like, you know, when grandma makes something, when grandma makes bread, it's better than store-bought bread, in essence. It's like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's made with love. It's more cared. And you're making a name for yourself, brother, and you're doing a good job. And your hard work is showing in your craft, and that's awesome.
It is. It's getting back to the craft.
And that passion's there. Mm-hmm. And it's through your mall. It's through what you're doing and taking the time to talk about it. And that's badass, dude.
Thank you. Thank you.
So how long are we kilning? How long do you typically kiln?
Depends on the malt.
Okay, so let's say we're just doing a pale. That's a basic.
Probably around. It depends on the outside temperature as well.
Okay.
So if it's summer outside, it's going to be 20 hours. If it's winter outside, it's probably closer to like 26 hours.
Damn. And then you had to do all the research and probably experiment to mm-hmm. see all this is going on.
I had to see, even with a lot of information, like you just have to see how your equipment works.
Yeah.
Luckily, I put a lot of technology into the kiln. A lot of my stuff is old world, like traditional styles, uh-huh. but I've got a smart system for the kiln.
That's good. That's awesome. And then after the kilning, what happens?
It grows little rootlets in the process, so you have to remove those rootlets. They're like 28% protein. Brewers don't want that.
Nope.
So we have to clean it again and then package it in super sacks or into 50-pound bags.
And then typically in 50-pound bags?
Yeah.
So typically how many bags do you make in one go-around?
So I'll start with 8,000 pounds of grain, mm-hmm. and I'll end up with about 7,400 pounds.
Okay.
You lose a lot from moisture and rootlets. And
then, curious question, but what do you do with the excess waste? What do you do with it?
It goes back to the farmer.
Just feed?
Yeah, that's feed. Awesome. They'll throw me some slabs of meat.
That's like awesome. And they come pick it up for you?
It's very reciprocal. It's awesome.
Really cool. Yeah, because when I grain out, we have a farmer that comes and picks it up and gets to feed his livestock.
Yep.
And all he has to do is to take it from me. I don't have to pay money to get rid of it.
It's great feed for them.
And it really is, as long as it's not super wet. I've learned that. One time I left it a little bit wet, and they don't like it super wet. But hey, it's delicious, right? So I'm going to skip to, you know, we'll come back to the process. You have in front of us a bunch of grain.
Yep.
And so I want to know, Cody, does this any of this look familiar to you? Like anything?
Like wheat?
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, it looks like, yeah, grain. Oats, kind of, yeah.
If all this in front of you, like what's going through your head, Cody? Because you're not a brewer, you haven't home brewed, you drink beer, and you appreciate the craft. You've been on here a couple times, you understand the end process, but have you
right?
You know, like what's going through your head,
it's
dude?
It's so new. Especially is that chocolate. That's the but it's not actually chocolate. So it's interesting to see what it looks like before. It's all smoky and dark. Yeah.
So, I mean, let's try some. Yeah. James, you have a chocolate in front of you. Like, talk to us about this chocolate malt you have in front of us.
This is the only one that I didn't make. You need a roaster for this, and just like roasting coffee kind of roast.
Yeah.
And it's really good for stouts.
So orders. Where did you get this one from?
This one is Weyermann's chocolate.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay. So in front of I brought I use Tom Fawcett,
mm-hmm.
Thomas Fawcett. And so you can put the two together. I mean, look at them. I mean, Cody, I'm curious to see, like, what you think. I mean, this is, again, not chocolate.
Yeah.
But this is what
use. But that's what.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just really, yeah, it's funny how it.
If you feel free to, if you want to taste some. I've never, how many times do you grab your own malt and put some in your mouth and just nibble on it?
I eat probably like a kilo a week.
I mean, that's,
eat it.
I think
great.
You have to. And it's like, just chewing on and nibbling on it, and it's just different. And it's like tasting beer. Each malt has a different characteristic, and that's where you want in your beer. In order to make a good beer, you got to have the recipe and the right malt, a malt build to make the beer you want. And this is what James does, you know, Cody, to kind of fabricate this whole process. And it's beautiful. It's awesome. And so, wow. I mean, what do you think?
That's interesting. There's a lot of flavor in there. I didn't expect that. That's really cool, actually.
Yeah. And I mean, it's awesome. So, in front of us, I think I'm curious about you have the wind. You have this wind. What is this wind malt?
Wind malt. So before technology, they had to dry malt,
mm-hmm.
and they were done really two ways. One was put it over fire, Rauchbier beers, and mm-hmm. it'd be smoky. And the other was to lay it out on wood planks and let the wind dry it, the sun.
Interesting.
So my version, instead of kilning in the regular 24 hours, I let this go without heat for 3 days in late August. And
why late August?
That's the only real time where you can get those temperatures and low enough humidity to get the grain down to to, I think it ended up at like 5.5% moisture.
Interesting. May I?
Please. And it came out way darker than I thought it would. It's probably at like 2.2 SRM, but I was expecting it like in the low ones. And it definitely has like a different taste.
You know what? That's sweeter than I thought it'd be.
I agree.
Fascinating.
Ooh. So that one's really earth friendly. Didn't require any kind of natural gas or any kind of heat.
But it's time consuming, and then you have to do it at a certain time of year.
You can only do it a certain time of year, so it's. But it was fun to do, and that's one awesome thing I can do. Since I'm so small, I can take these trials, experiments. Big malt houses don't have the, can't afford like putting 300 tons into a certain experiment.
Because if it goes wrong, you just fucked up that whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow, I like that.
And that's what craft brewers are the same way. Mm-hmm. They're able to experiment more than Budweiser.
But at the end of the day, in my mind, and I think you'll agree, beer has to taste like beer. Malt has to taste like motherfucking malt. And so the fact that this still, I mean, using the wind, and that this still tastes like malt, and it's, I'm getting that grassy, that sweet. This is beautiful.
There's going to be some DMS in there.
Interesting.
You don't get to those temperatures. Like, you drive off a lot of DMS and its precursor once you get to those curing temperatures.
Okay.
But this is going to have more.
So, what is DMS?
Dimethyl sulfide. Mm-hmm. Oh. And it's, people have different flavors that they get from it, but it's considered an off flavor. Mm-hmm. And it comes from the malt. And brewers are able to boil away a lot of it as well. But I recommend brewers boil for like at least 90 minutes with this.
Oh, wow.
Just because you need to, like, you want to have that clean flavor.
Yeah.
And that's one cool thing too, is you get to, like, brewers get to work with the maltsters.
Right.
Instead of just being an ingredient.
Well, that's the thing. You are like friends with brewers.
All my best friends are brewers and distillers.
And that's cool, because you guys are all, it's like this, this is what I love about our community, is it's just like mesh network where we're all helping each other. I have not once heard bad talk of like competition, or like, hey, like, I'm a better maltster than this guy, or this guy's, you know, whatever beer is better than I'm, you know, what, it, there's no like flexing in this community. It's all a network for the most part, and I like that. I really do. And you're part of that, James, and that's beautiful, brother.
It's amazing. Like, coming from finance, everybody's cutthroat. Like, they're,
oh, you have to in order to live.
And I went to a party, and there were like seven head brewers there helping each other. And like,
exactly.
Enjoying each other's beers. And it blew my mind.
Yeah. And that's my favorite thing, is like, we don't, I mean, I'm not as experienced as these big time brewers, but like, they'll sit down and they'll help another brewer, like, hey, I'm getting this off flavor. What's going on? Like, for example, yesterday, I took a beer to one of the brewers. I'm like, hey, I'm not getting this certain flavor. That you posted this flavor and I'm not getting it. And they're like, oh, he's explained to me why. And so we explained, and we talked about it a little more, and we figured out, you know, what happened with it. But it wasn't like this beer's shitty. Like, this is a bad beer. And I was like, where are we going with this? I didn't know. And then once it got explained, it's like, oh, yeah, fuck yeah. Like, I love that.
Yep.
So I want to know, in front of you, you have chocolate pale, wheat, Pete's. Is that pure?
Purple.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Time out. Purple. What the hell did you just bring us?
So this is an Egyptian variety that is wholeless, and it's a barley.
Interesting.
It's colored by anthocyanins.
What the hell is that?
It's kind of the same thing that's in purple broccoli.
Okay.
So it is pH dependent as well. So at base, it's more purple, and at beer pHs, it's kind of pinkish. But it is water soluble, so you lose a lot in the malting process. And it's an ancient grain. I malted it about twice the amount of time that I do for these barleys that have been bred for malting characteristics, and it's still under-modified. So back in the day, it took about a month to malt grain, and through genetics and breeding, we've been shortening it down to about a week.
No way.
Over the last 120 years.
Cody, I want to see what you think about that one.
This guy's ancient.
This one, it's very dirt. It's very earthy. It's very, well, Cody, I'm gonna tell me what you think about that. And it's crunchy as fuck.
Yeah. It is. It's under-modified.
And so I'm trying to think, what would I use that? I'm like, my mind's going right now. Have you had anyone use this right now? Have you used it personally? Because
I have.
I guess we'll go into this real quick. You homebrew.
I do.
Correct? So how long have you been homebrewing?
That's 2014. About that time frame.
And so how confident or how, you know the brewing process pretty well then?
I also took chemistry 4970 from University of Oklahoma, like the science of brewing beer. Damn. It got into the like the Breaking Bad stuff.
Oh wow!
It got intense and in-depth, the chemistry. Huh?
And did you? I mean, you love that?
I can talk brewery. Yeah,
that's sick. I love that. So when it comes to this, who's used this or have you used this?
A few brewers have. Hopkins did 100%. I recommend using it kind of like a wheat.
Okay.
And
because what? How would you play that off? Like when it 100% wheat? Like
no, I'd use it like 30%.
Okay,
like, and just try to get some colors and flavors out of it.
Okay,
it is unique though.
Interesting. And what did the Hopkins do with it? They
did 100%.
Wow.
And I'm like, you have to step mash this just so you, because it's not going to fully convert unless you go through the long process of brewing
it. I'm gonna have to ask about how that went. But what beer did he go with that one?
I don't recall.
Interesting. We're gonna have to bring that one up. I will. Check back with Chad on that one. I'm curious because I've never even tried this purple malt. Like, this is super cool.
Yeah, there are grains out there that are multiple, and brewers are always looking for something new. So, yeah. And I'm small enough that I can do it. So that's I've done a lot of weird experiments.
So if we had like an idea for a malt and came to you with it, is there like you could?
Oh, I'm definitely in.
That's super cool. That's so rad.
Yep.
And are you just in Utah? Are you just Utah based?
I haven't had to sell outside of Utah. Mm-hmm. I am working with a company in Arizona called Grain R&D. And I malt Sonoran white wheat for them. It's the oldest wheat variety in North America.
Wow!
So they're bringing out some ancient grains. I'm wanting to encourage them to.
And are you trying to go back to that ancient grain kind of method and that taste, because it's for you? It's more you like traditional style.
I like experimenting with seeing if you can get unique flavors out of it.
Yeah,
and I don't like making boring malt.
Yeah, I mean, anyone can make boring malt, right? But to be what about specialty malts? Are you is that something you'd rather do instead of base malts? You'd rather just do funky malts? You'd rather stick with the ancient? Like, what's talk to me about what you want to do.
I like doing some of these special ones, but the money is in base malt. Mm-hmm. That's what most is used. And,
right.
And when I started thinking about this as a business, I just kept going back to floor malting creates a premium product. So I knew I had to go that route. So
I'm glad you floor malt. That's amazing.
Thank
but
you.
I mean, laborious, but nonetheless.
It is, but it burns off some beer calories.
Thank God, because we all could use that, right? But I want to go over this, the wheat. Let's talk about your wheat you have in front of us.
This comes out of Nephi. It's a hard winter red wheat. Oh. And
I should have brought some red wheat from Breeze. That's who I typically use, Breeze and Wireman. And Tom Fawcett.
It's grown in Nephi, and brewers like it. But wheat can come in white or red, hard or soft, winter or spring.
So what's the difference between winter malt and a spring malt?
Depends on when you plant it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them do better with the cold temperatures, and you can get a more of a product if it's like done or has been in the ground longer.
So I feel like in order to be a maltster, you have to be a gardener.
You need to know.
And a farmer.
You need to be able to talk farmer.
So you talk farm,
mm-hmm.
you talk garden, you talk brewer.
Mm-hmm.
That's super rad. Like, you're kind of the trick of all trades.
No, I've had to learn a lot. And farmers kind of have their own language.
Oh, yeah?
It's a unique world.
I am not familiar with
it. I wasn't either. But I've been working with Utah State University.
Okay.
And their grain guy, Dr. Hole, has helped me a lot in learning.
That's so rad.
The agriculture side.
That's super cool. And then have you ever been seeing that process? Like, have you gone and been watch them seed and
yep.
You've been helping that?
I've been there helping combine.
You've watched your malt from day one to sell.
And those are good days when you harvest, and the days that you just walk through the fields, they're the nice.
I just picture with a straw hat just walking and like a long straw in your mouth, just like overalls, your hands in your pocket, like, hell yeah.
No, it's awesome to see it come from the earth.
That's super cool.
It's a super connection that I think we've lost in a lot of our foods.
And I feel like you're trying to showcase that. And as a brewer, that's super cool. That's so rad, James.
It is fun.
Can we be friends forever, dude?
Yeah, we're in.
Yes. But are you planning, would you like to go outside of Utah? Or are you just so private and so unique
I'll
stay here?
If somebody really wanted outside of Utah, I mean, I haven't been able to work out like shipping.
Right, that's a pain. Making it,
yeah, I know. I don't have distribution setups currently.
Do you want this? Would you like to see the Solstice name as a national brand?
I'm pretty happy with the size that I'm at right now.
Yeah, so because I was talking to, you know, like small breweries, and I can go work for a bigger brewery, but I don't have say in in the beer. It's, you're making their big time beer. These smaller breweries are cool because we can make funky, fancy, awesome shit as long as the beer tastes like beer. We can make whatever we want, right? And so here's an example you have in front of us. You brought the Level Crossing Barley Wine Ale, which I believe is their batch number 6, I believe.
It's of the Red Feather series. Red I believe Feather, it's 6. All
right, batch 6, Red Feather series, Barley Wine Ale, and it's 12%. Talk to us about this one.
So my favorite malt out of everything I do here is my mild malt. It's about like 4.8 or 5 SRM, and it brings out some of the melanoidins that I really enjoy in a malty beer. And this guy uses a lot of it. It's almost all mild malt.
Oh, yeah?
And so this is like a perfect application of what I would want in a beer.
So that's beautiful, because I remember asking you, James, specifically, if you were to name a beer in Utah right now that kind of says Solstice Malt, this was one of the first ones you told me about. Yep. And this just came out.
It came out yesterday.
And right now, as of right now, you can only get it at the Level Crossing brew house. However, it's a limited series, so get it while it's hot.
It's going pretty quick.
It is. But, I mean, look at that color. That is so fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. You know what? I'm surprised on... Yeah, that color is... Oh, man. Here we go. Woo! I can make a candle out of this.
Yeah.
Cody, what do you think? What are you getting?
Ooh.
Tell me what you get.
Whoa. That's really good. I'm not even sure what I'm getting. That's so new to me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because you're not, I guess you're not familiar with.
I'm not familiar with this at all. I'm like, again, like, I have no idea what I'm looking at.
Wow.
But this is, it's interesting.
See, this right here, James, that's that right there.
That's where it is.
And that's super cool, because those are the aha moments that we shoot for. Yeah. I mean, speaking, you know, being in the brewing process, like, that's like, the fact that Level Crossing can make a beer with James's malt, and James had, like, this, in my mind, James is kind of a baby. Like, this is one of your babies.
Yeah.
And the consumer can have that and enjoy it. Fuck yeah. That's so rad. But I love it. And I'm not a barley wine person. I think we were talking about this earlier, James. You're not a barley wine person at all.
I'm not. They're really difficult to produce. But this one is great.
I get, like, a little plum.
Yeah.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the very end. You know what? I was kind of scared because this is 12.11% ABV. And I'm not... Well, if it goes past 9%, I'm like, I'm kind of done with the... Like, yeah. It's just too much for me. But it's actually not bad. It plays well.
Yeah.
Interesting. James, what do you like about this one?
It's got some caramel notes in it. It's got some big malt.
Is that mild what I'm tasting in the front? That first, very beginning?
Sorry, there's that sweetness in the front. And there is like a decent amount of hops in there. So it kind of balances it out. I think that's why it drinks so well at 12.
Well, I mean, if it's a balanced beer,
yeah,
that's what you want. That's what you need. Mm. Well done, Level Crossing. Good job, Chris. We'll tell him. Good job. But when it goes to something like this, what's something that you just want? I mean, would you like all the brewers use your malt? Is that your goal?
I want to get in with every brewer in Utah.
That'd be awesome.
I've done really well at getting most.
Well, you're also a really cool guy. You're really chill.
Oh, thank you.
You're not intimidating.
Buy my malt.
Fuck
no,
you.
I'm a bad salesperson. Luckily, the malt sells itself.
But that's the thing. Your craft, your passion, it really is speaking for itself.
Thank you.
You're catching an eye, and this to me is fascinating. And I want to try the pale. I think, Cody, pale malt is typically like, it's a good base. Like, a lot of people use pale malt. So this is one that... Basically, everyone uses for majority of their grain bill.
Okay.
Typically, it's not like every beer is, but this is what, you know, the majority of that malt characteristic you'll get in most beers. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, Solstice. This is local. But tell me what you get off of it. Kind of like that cereal.
Wow, reminds me of something, yeah.
But to me, it's like, it's fascinating. Fascinating. So I had a question for you, James. How long can you sit on a bag of grain?
I tell brewers, like, it needs to be, like, it needs to be used within 6 months.
6 months?
That's what I like.
Is that the Book of James? Is that
it's the Book of James. In the malt guild, there's different, some people like within three. Mm-hmm. Things start deteriorating, enzymes and stuff, after 6 months.
Yeah.
But also I learned you can't really use it right out of the kiln either. Otherwise,
have you experimented that way?
Yes. My very first batch, I sent it out to a lot of homebrewers just to have them test it.
Mm-hmm.
And a few people had efficiency issues. And I had to ask the guild, I'm like, what's going on? Like, everybody like pretty consistently had it. And the ex-maltster from Coors said, yeah, you have to age it 21 days before you can use it.
And why is that?
There's some equilibrium that happens inside the grain. I guess it's really minute. They even had a special machine for it with Coors. And there's further degradation that happens that allows the crush to happen better.
Okay.
And the moisture is kind of equalized as well.
Fascinating.
So, yeah, there has to be some aging before it goes out to the brewer.
I didn't know that. I did not know that.
I didn't either.
Wow. 21 days. That's fascinating.
And so it's actually been hard to, like, don't overpromise malt to brewers. Like, I've had a hard time, like, keeping up with demand.
Yeah. Well, that's a good problem to have, if you will, right? And are you just going to have to tell them, hey, be patient, I'm waiting for it? I mean, small.
I've had to tell brewers I don't have it. I got bought out.
Yeah.
But it's happened, like, only a few times.
So
do you think
here soon you'll be able to expand? I know 2020 and COVID have kind of, you know, I bet, taken a little hit, but you're looking to expand soon?
I don't think so. I'm kind of maxed out. I know where my bottlenecks are. What I can do is stagger batches where I can start a batch before another one's done. So that gets me to use about 6 batches per month. Right now I'm at one batch. I focus on it, and it's been nice to just focus on it. It takes about a week, so I can get 4 batches per month.
Mm-hmm.
But I have started staggering. It's just a lot of work.
Yeah. I mean, you seem pretty busy. And do you still have a good social life and, like, time with the wife? And
yeah.
Yeah, well, that's
good. The kids come. They know more about malting than most many brewers.
that's awesome. Cool.
So they shovel malts and they vacuum.
You put them to work?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm throwing those kids up right.
Hell yeah.
And they also have, like, a little greenhouse in there where they watch, like, Disney VHS movies and stuff.
James, you get cooler and cooler the more I talk
about
you.
Thank you.
Okay, I need to know about this rye. You have F rye. What did you bring for us?
I also flake grains.
Okay.
So this is rye.
You know what? I'm not a fan of rye.
That's okay.
I'm very curious.
There's different kinds of rye. There's a lot more variety in rye than barley. Some of them are spicy. Some of them are earthy. I believe this is pumpernickel.
Interesting.
And I flake grains as well. So I do wheat.
How do you flake grain?
So it depends on the grain. Oats, I get from a farm in West Jordan.
Okay.
And they still have the hull on them. But I run them through a machine, a flaker. And it took me a while to get that equipment because they either made flaking in, like, 1 ounce per minute or, like, a ton per minute. There was nothing really my size for flaking. But I was able to find a machine that, as it squeezes the grain, it builds up pressure and heat. And that heat will gelatinize the starches and allow it for brewing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
But oats I can just flake right away.
Okay.
And they come with the hull, so it helps out with really...
Oh, that's really cool.
They're kind of like rice hulls. So brewers would like them for oat-heavy beers.
Mm-hmm.
But wheat, I actually have to soak it. Otherwise, it would just crush.
Okay.
So I soak it for a while, and then after flaking, it was still wet. So I actually had to build, like, a little mini kiln to drive off the moisture.
Okay. So I'm curious in the water you use, and this is going to be, for those who don't know, a dumb question, but I'm going to ask it because I think people need to know. Mm-hmm. The pH in the water you use, mm-hmm. is that important?
I tracked it in the very beginning. Unless it's really extreme on one side or the other, not particularly.
Really?
It just needs to be free of chlorine and chloramines, just like brewing.
Yep.
So I do put a filter into a holding tank where it pre-cools the water so it doesn't shock it when I start to soak it.
Because if you were to shock the grain itself, did you just ruin your batch?
It wouldn't germinate as well. And
so it's still salvageable in a way?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it would be less uniform, probably. And it would probably take just a hair longer.
Interesting. So that rye, Cody, what do you think about that rye?
Yeah, so these are all wheat. that correct?
This is there's only one wheat. The rest of them are barley.
So that's barley, wheat, and then this is
rye.
Rye, which is
another.
Is that like, it's like an oat, you said?
Oh, it's its own species of grain.
Okay.
Called cicali.
Interesting.
Cereal.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Latin. I didn't know the Latin name.
Wheat is triticum, and barley is hordeum vulgare, or the vulgar whore, as we use in the...
I get it.
In the industry.
What do you think about that rye, Cody?
That's interesting, yeah. I think I could eat some more.
It kind of gave off an herbalness to it that I really appreciated, but I don't like rye whiskeys. However, rye beers, I'm okay with. Does that make sense? So I'm curious, how many distillers have you used your grains?
Most. Ones in Utah. Alpine uses a lot. I'm doing a Beehive's rye program. Worked with Holy Stone. Mm-hmm. Worked with Hammer Springs.
You are working with Holy Stone. So we just interviewed Mike and Barbie not too long ago. So what are you using? What are they using from you?
I smoked applewood grain for them. And some peated malt for them.
Ooh, so they're coming out with something special soon, sounds like.
But whiskey is it's a different world. It's years in the making. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. It may be a while.
So I guess, Ethan, you've been talking to you over at Holy Stone. Mm-hmm. And you've been, that's awesome.
Yeah, Sugar House.
What's your favorite liquor?
Whiskey.
Why?
I like a lot of the barrel notes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you were telling me mm-hmm. that you've been doing a lot of barrel aging beer, correct?
I have, with a local home brewing club. I'm now their barrel coordinator.
That's super cool. So where are you getting your barrels from?
A lot of the distillers that I work with, yeah.
That's super cool.
I got a lot from Sugar House. He's great to work with.
So do you ever get, this is a dumb question, but do you ever get to save some of that whiskey that happens to be in the barrels?
They come to freshly dumped, but they're empty. They're especially dumped. I am planning on making a barrel-aged malt, though. That's going to be in the next. Yep. I'm going to get a fresh barrel, dump grain in there, or malt, finished malt. And for those that don't have space for barrel aging, it'll still give off barrel notes when they brew with it.
And is this something that you've heard about and read about and you want to try, or is this something that you just created?
Other maltsters, kind of like a community with like the brewers, mm-hmm. really tight and close, and they experiment and tell.
That's super cool. How long you got to barrel age these malts?
Like typically around like 3 months. You can do more.
Of course, because you get more of those flavors. That's super cool. That's really cool. Oh my God.
I got a tip from one of the maltsters in Washington, and he smokes hazelnut shells.
Oh my God.
And it's candy. It is, some of the oils are transferred from the shell to the malt, and I just eat it like as a snack at the malt. It's so good.
So that begs the question I was going to ask you. Have you ever tried malt balls? Tried making malt balls?
No. That's an intense process.
I was a little curious. Like maybe.
So you have to basically make a wort, and then you have to dehydrate it down to a syrup, and then it goes into like a puffing gun to get it into like basically dry malt extract.
Interesting.
And it's a lot of equipment and energy that it's just one route that I don't plan on going down.
Okay. I was going to say, I wouldn't mind like getting some solstice malt and then have malt balls.
I have heard of other maltsters making like a syrup, like a liquid malt syrup, and then using it in confectionery, like chocolates.
That's really cool.
So I've thought about approaching.
Because think about it. If I were to get a pallet full of solstice malt and then a little snack, it's like, hey.
I do send Whoppers in my palate.
That's really cool. That's super cool. Because we always get Derek and I always get nut rolls.
Yep.
From BSG. And it's the best. We fight over it all the time.
No, they're good. And so I've kind of taken my own twist of those malted balls from
Whoppers. That's
really
cool. Super cool. So what's your favorite style of beer?
I like the Box, the Marzins.
Okay.
Those are my kind of style.
So what's your favorite local beer right now?
It's this guy. It says barley. It's barley wine.
It's pretty damn good. Pretty good.
And I'm not a barley wine fan. I'm not, but this is...
It's good.
It's good. We did a barley wine episode not too long ago, and we just nope, it wasn't good. Yeah. Nope, absolutely not. But I wish this would have been available because that would have been, there is good barley wine out there. And favorite local brewery right now?
I've been going to Hopkins a lot.
There you go.
I mean, Hopkins is pretty cool.
Yeah.
They got some cool stuff going on. Chad's a good guy.
Yeah.
Don't tell him I told you that. Let's see. Your favorite beer to make?
I make a lot of smash beers just because I usually brew with every batch that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of gotten over just smash. I always use Cascade hops. And so I've just kind of gotten boring of that. But I know the taste of it, so I can... Right. I've been trying to figure out some new hops for quality control.
Okay.
But I did recently make a Almond Joy beer.
Shut up.
Yep.
You were telling me about this the other day. Talk to me about the Almond Joy beer.
So nobody in my family really likes those little Almond Joy candy bars. The fun-sized ones. I had like 50 of them.
Jesus.
But then I recalled I really like these flavors in a barrel-aged stout. So... That 10 minutes left in the boil, I had my kids unwrap 50 fun size, and I threw it in.
You just threw it in the boil. All these Almond Joys, just threw them in there.
Just threw them in there. The chocolate's going to kill head retention, and I don't really care, but then I was able to get 15 gallons, and I threw it in a Sugar House barrel.
And it's sitting there?
Sitting there right now.
How long are you going to age that for, if you don't mind
It depends on, like, probably like 6 months.
See, I barrel aging, I have no patience for that. I mean, like, I just want to, like, I want to taste it now. You know what I mean? But I'm proud. I'm curious to know when that comes out. Let me know, because I want to totally taste that.
That's gonna be good. Well, we'll see.
So. Yeah, I hope so. It sounds good.
Yeah, mean,
we're all mouth watering for that. Then you have one here. You have Pete. Tell us about Pete. What's so fascinating about Pete?
Pete is really interesting. If you ever had a chance to burn it or smell it, it's almost like a cologne. It's a musk.
Musk.
I've been smoking meats with fruit wood for years and years, and so I still do a lot of that. But peat is its own beast. I have ordered some from Ireland, but I heard from a friend that there was some up in the Uinta Mountains, and so I went on an adventure to see if I could go find some, and I was able to procure some. But I was thinking, like, who owns this? Do I need a license for this? Like, am I even able to take it? So I called the Forestry Service. I called the state. Whoa. Nobody knew. Most people didn't even know it was up there. But I was able to find who owns it. It's BOM, and they consider it a mineral by the way they strip mine it in places where there's lots of peat. So he had no idea about regulations. He's like, I have no idea. As long as you take less than 4 cubic feet, we could consider it samples. So able to take 4 cubic feet a year. So I have to hike up in there. It's about a mile in from the road.
What time of year? Is it important for the time of year?
No, it just has to be
a year from warm. When you did it last time?
When the roads are open.
Oh, so you can go up personally?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And I've had friends come too, but it's about 10,000 feet up.
Damn,
altitude,
dude,
is where it's at.
So it's a nice little day journey.
Yeah. It's a fun adventure for the day.
And then you bring the peat back. And then, Cody, you just tried the peat. Are you familiar with peat at all?
No, not at all.
So, like, fascinating.
That is. How does something taste like that? And everything's so different.
Like, mind-blowing, in a way.
Yeah, it's like, that's like an aftershave or like a beard oil, I feel like, that I put on before. Yeah, you know?
And some people really dig peat, and some people hate it. It's too medicinal, and it's too iodine-y.
So Wyatt loves peat. He likes the peat flavor. Mm. I do not. To me, it's kind of musky. It's that kind of... For me, it's not an off flavor in my palate. It's like it's just too much for me. I don't like it, but it complements well if you can do it right. I really think so, and I like it in this malt.
And this is a bit different than other peat, just because the stuff that you get out of the country, it's basically straight sphagnum moss that's been decomposing. And up in the mountains, there's a lot of mountain grasses and other.
I feel like it's more fresh up there.
Yeah,
and that's why this one tastes different than a bog. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I think you going and doing that day hike actually pays off.
It does.
That's really cool, James. This is super. When you told me that story for the first time not so long ago, I was like, this is badass. That's super cool.
It was fun.
And then were you just tickled when you found that out?
Oh, yeah. It was awesome. Like, I could keep things local.
Oh, yeah. Cause it's still here, right?
Yep. Utah Pete. And
yes. Like,
nobody else has that.
No one does. And you can actually say that. That's really cool. So, how far have you had to travel to get your, like, what's the furthest you've had to travel to get your ingredients?
I've done really good at keeping my barley out of Cache Valley, and I've picked up another one out of Mighton, Utah. It's closer to Vernal.
Mighton, Utah.
Yeah.
Not familiar with that.
But Wheat comes out of Nephi. Oats come out of West Jordan, super local.
Mm-hmm.
The purple barley was grown in southern Idaho. That's probably going to be the farthest one. And I've worked with another farmer in southern Idaho for some barley.
Okay.
But
super cool.
It's been important to keep the like money in Utah.
Yeah. So have you tried a malting quinoa?
I haven't. Other maltsters have. There's a malt house in Colorado called Grouse Malting. They do exclusively gluten-free grains.
So gluten-free?
Yep.
Are you fucking with gluten-free?
No. It's way too hard for my system to...
So what's the difference, if you will?
Some grains have a protein called gluten. And some people have issues with their digestive system for the gluten protein. And I don't feel my system would be able to guarantee a gluten-free grain without contamination from like previous batches.
Right.
There's just it's hard to keep things segregated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the route that I decided to go.
So
I wouldn't be opposed to it.
If you could do it.
Yeah. I couldn't guarantee gluten-free in my products.
Gotcha. That's good to know. I mean, just in case people were to ask, because I know that people are messing with the sorghum lately. And I think Chad actually came out with the sorghum, strawberry sorghum.
He used a syrup, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm going to have to ask him on that one. But I'm just curious, I guess not doing gluten-free anytime soon, which is fine. The idea of honey malt. Have you tried honey malt before?
I haven't been able to procure. I can get up to about 35 Levibond in my kiln.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't really get to those temperatures without a roaster.
So are you looking to get a roaster?
Yes. That's definitely in the future.
Hell yeah.
And I even talked with a person last night that has a coffee shop. And I'm all like, I've been asking a lot of coffee shop owners, hey, you guys want to try barley or malt?
Let's try like a collab off, if you will.
Yep. And that would be awesome to offer to my brewers of like fresh malt.
Oh, roasted my God. Could you imagine
malt.
That?
Yeah.
Let's give you more weapons in your arsenal. That'd be super cool.
It's its own art and science. Like, you'd have to learn a lot about the roasting process.
Well, it's the same thing with like brewing. You got to keep up on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a never ending. That's what I like about it is every day I'm always learning something new, something to keep on top of. And it's just fascinating. Like, my wife always is like, why are you always drinking goddamn beer all the time? I'm like, because it's new. I was like, but it's beer. But it's good. It's different. Like we had this barley wine. I have to try this. And like, you're drinking again. But I got there's crafts in it. There's why also in hazy IPAs. All IPAs would be hazy now. Why? I don't know, but I have to be on top of that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so I love that getting to the depth of the malt. And messing with the malt, because we tried experimenting, because like you do, you experiment. I brought a malt that I've used. Derek and I used one called Black Prims. It's a dark, it's kind of a roastier malt, and it's a bitterless malt. So we purely use this to add color, SRM. That's all I want to do is add SRM. So I want you guys, I don't know if you're familiar with this, it's a bitterless malt called Black Prims from Breeze. The idea was really cool. It was... tasting it, I couldn't believe it really was bitterless. Like I didn't get any better. You get the roasty, and I'm like, cool, we're gonna use it to just simply darken our beer.
Do you know how they made it bitterless?
No. Tell me why.
They removed the husk.
Now is that simple?
All the tannins, most of the tannins are in the husk.
And that's
it. So you remove the husk, then roast it.
Tons of bitches. But what do you think, Cody?
Ma'am. This has just been like a sensory, like information overload. Like my mind is blown right now. I'm just trying to take it all in. This is insane.
So we tried using this malt to, like I said, just for SRM, which is color. And we just try to darken. We're making a stout and it didn't work. We'll never use Black Prims again because it didn't darken like the way we wanted to. But like all the tests, like it comes out like it's super dark. Like look at it. It's the darkest one on this table.
I'm surprised it didn't.
Same. But it's fascinating that the beer list that we thought would be cool, you know? And is there a malt that you're just waiting to try, like you're waiting to make?
It'll be the roasted guys.
The roasted ones?
It'll be a big learning experiment of like getting things down and consistent.
I'm excited for you to do that, dude. I really am.
I really don't want to go that dark, though. Like, you're bringing these grains up to like combustion temperatures.
Yeah.
And you have to spray them just so they won't ignite.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah. don't know.
Have you tried to mess with that? Have you gone that high before? Very
no,
dark?
No. I have put stuff in the oven, but that's it's like 450.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just getting some roasty flavors.
Yeah, fascinating.
Getting to that is you have to be good at roasting.
Yeah.
And I mean, companies like Wireman, they've been around for 200 years and they've got it down. They're really good.
Yeah. I mean, I love their Dunkel malt. It's just really good. And I'm curious to know, for those who don't know, I there's some malts that help with head retention. Why is that?
It's usually protein. I didn't bring it, but I have a chip malt.
I have Dextrin malt in front of us, but
okay. It's chip malt is how a lot of brewers will use to create head retention. You only modify it for one day or let it germinate for one day as opposed to the normal 4 or 5 days.
Okay.
So it's still under modified, but if you use like 5% of it in a brew, it really will help with head retention.
And that's, to me, it's really cool because for me, I like beers that like darker beers. I like that head. For me, head's sexy, right? And the head retention is cool. So that's to me, it's the fact that you have an art in malting. Like, there's so much to it, James. Like, there's so much to it, my man. And the fact that you're doing it by yourself just still blows my mind, dude. Like, I don't know how.
Well, there's a lot of help from the family. Man.
But like, still, like, that's a lot of work, brother.
Yeah, it is.
And there's so much. But, like, you're still happy and you're still doing it.
But it's part of the craft.
And see the smile you're on your face right now? Like, it's super cool. And I'm glad we're friends and I'm glad we're met because this right here is just. And, Cody, I mean, thanks for sharing this right now because your mind's being blown.
Yeah.
But this is why I got into what I'm doing. Because and James is doing what he's doing is because there's something super cool. Because how many times can you sit here and just drink a beer? Let's get together at a table or a party, anniversary party, if you will, at a whatever, and we can drink let's all have a pint together. Yeah. And beer's like this camaraderie kind of thing. Let's all get together and just drink a beer. And then like, what makes this beer super cool? Well, I provide the malt. Well, I provide the hops. Well, I make the beer. Like, this is super cool. And that's why, to me, this is the most fascinating thing I've come up with my life so far. This is super cool. And James, like, you're blowing my mind. Like, Cody's mind's being blown, but you're blowing my mind. Like, your wind malt, like, I just want to use that all the time now. That's super cool, dude. Super rad.
It's fun. And it's fun to, like, work with them to create these beers that you can enjoy and get the fruits of your labors.
So what's something, I know, and let's take away COVID and all that bullshit, but what's something that you see happening in Solstice, or you want to see happen Solstice Malt 2021?
It's probably going to be a roaster.
Okay.
Got a grain bin that's probably going to be set up pretty soon. I'll probably be hiring somebody just because it's
like an apprentice or an assistant.
Somebody that understands beer, like probably maybe from a brewery or like a.
You can be passionate too.
Yeah. It's got to be there.
It has to.
Yeah.
Because it speaks.
Yep.
It really does. What brewery are you just itching to make malt for?
TF.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why hasn't Kevin... Why?
He's a Wireman fan. They talk to each other like on a weekly basis.
Oh, really?
He's been over there and they're friends and he has a close connection with Wireman and they make amazing malts.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to see how it stands up against the big boy. Mm-hmm. Like the really good malts.
Yeah.
But...
Because to see your like an award-winning beer with your malt in it, would that just be like just you know what I mean, like that aha moment almost?
I have helped with the gold medal winner of Hazy at the last GABF. Yep.
And how'd that feel?
It was a small part. I malted the Sonoran grain. It went back to Arizona, and they used it but it was the number one entry in like so many entries for the Hazy category.
Super cool,
so I was a part of it.
But like, how'd that feel, dude?
It was good. Like, I don't know. It felt like
your shit's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That's super cool. As someone, taste masters, I know why it's not here, unfortunately. But as taste masters, what would you like us to do to help personify Solstice Malt?
Go visit a farm.
Yeah.
Yeah. See where it's grown.
Yeah.
See the bigger part of the bigger picture of beer.
Yeah.
And it's a fun thing to do.
And like I like what you said back of your comment was it's from the earth. Like if you think about it, like beer is not so soda. It's not really. It's all like for me. It's like man made. It's all like artificial. It's all fabricated. But beer is like homegrown. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it's super cool. And that's why to me beer is fascinating. Just and it continues to fascinate me. And you know what? We'll make it go down to the farm. But next time you go to the farms, I would love an invite, and we'd go down and pick the brains of them. That'd be awesome. It's super cool. Cody, is there any questions you have for James this time?
At this moment, I probably have a lot of questions, but I'm still just trying to figure out everything that's going on here.
Well, really cool. What do you take from this episode?
I mean, just that I feel like beer is endless. I feel like just the variety of anything you can do. I mean, just looking at all these, like this grain here, and this is just a small part of it. And it's endless of information and just like potential, you know? It's crazy.
So going from that, when you've seen me from my start of my beer process, and you've known me for long enough where you've seen like why I've become fascinated with this, and I guess I've taken you along and like showed you beers and different brewers and have now introduced you to a maltster. Like, I guess, thanks for sharing this craft, like the knowledge with me, you know, and drinking those beers.
Yeah.
But this, like, I guess, do you see like a different appreciation in your mind for
absolutely.
Like beer?
Yeah. Yeah. This has changed my whole outlook on it.
I don't like going to the domestic beers. I hate going to the grocery store to get beers. I try to go to the breweries, get them fresh, get them there, get them local. And like James is making his malt locally from local ingredients, local malt, local brewery, get it your beer at the brewery. It just makes sense. It's better. Grandma made it. It's grandma made. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the pure art of it. And I love it. And James, like, when can I bring you onto this podcast again? I would love to talk to you.
I'm usually pretty game as long as the grain timing works as well.
Hell yeah. When you get that roaster, let's do a roasting episode. I would love that.
We'll see.
It'll be time.
I'll have to get a few batches in before.
You'll get it, dude. You'll get it. It's just a process, and you'll get it because you continue to grow. And I applaud you on what you've been doing and what you've done. And, you know, I hope the best for you in your future endeavors. I really do.
Thank you.
But, guys, thanks for sharing this episode with me. And that'll do it for this episode. Real quick, I do have news. We're doing a little segment called Somewhat News and Other Things. So we're doing kind of beer news in the beer world. I found an interesting article from Brewbound that said that Anheuser-Busch is going to up their marketing for the Golden Road. So like the mango cart. You guys have had the mango cart, right? So they're doing a mango cart, fruit cart, hard seltzers. So now they're doing those mango carts, but they're doing a cucumber lime seltzer, strawberry pineapple seltzer, and mango seltzers. So seltzers are still, unfortunately, I don't like static water, but static electricity, but... even the big corporations, like I think people like us are scaring big companies because they're starting to make kind of like the interesting flavors, like cucumber lime, like Anheuser-Busch would have never done that 100 years ago. You know what I mean? Mm. But like you're seeing craft breweries making a name and scaring these bigger times that they're creating weird things like this because they have to keep up with it because it's in demand right now. But that'll do it for this episode, guys. Till the next Beverage Bros.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram @the_Tastemasters, on Twitter @TheTastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded @Fuse Audio. Give them a follow @Fuse_Audio.